Saram, dear listeners, and welcome once again to Vahini Satsang. I'm Team Radio Sai's Bishu, and as always, is Sai Prakash, the co-host of this program. And if you have been listening to our discussions in the past few weeks, we are in the final chapter of Prema Vahini. And this is the summary of everything that Bhagwan has written in the previous chapters. It is a slightly long chapter, and many ideas have been expressed. Swami has put it down in a very down-to-earth manner in this final chapter. So let's move on and listen to what Bhagwan has written, and then we'll pray to him for his guidance and understanding.
ఈ బాహ్యలోకమున ఏ విషయమునందైనను ప్రజలకు సదుపాయములు అనుకూలములు కావలెనన్నా, ప్రజలు ప్రభుత్వమునకు ఏ విధంగా తెలుపుకొందురో అదే విధంగా అంతర్విషయములందు భక్తి, కరుణ, శాంతి, సత్యముల సాధింప అనుకూలములు లేని సమయమున అంతరాత్మయైన పరమాత్మకు పై భక్తి, కరుణ, శాంతి, సత్యముల కోరు మహనీయులు తెలుపుకొందురు. అప్పుడు వారి ప్రార్థనల ఆలకించి లోకములకు భగవంతుడే వచ్చి ప్రసాదించుచుండును. ఈ విషయము సర్వులకు తెలిసియే ఉండును. అసలు రామకృష్ణాది అవతారములు ఇట్టి ప్రార్థనల వినియే కదా అవతరించిరి. రామాయణ భాగవతముల నుండి చాలామంది ఈ విషయమును తెలుసుకునే ఉందరు. అసలు రామకృష్ణ పరమహంస తాను దైవాంశ సంభూతుడైనను, తనకు మించిన పని అయినందువల్ల అట్టి అన్యాయ అహంకారములను నిర్మూలము చేయ, ధర్మమును బోధింప, ఎవరినైనా ఒకరిని ఈ లోకమునకు పంపుతల్లి అని కాళిని ప్రార్థించేవాడు. ఈ విషయం ఆయన చరిత్ర చదివిన వారికి బాగా తెలియను. అట్లనే ఒకతూరి కాకున్నా మరొకతూరి, మరొకతూరి కాకున్నా ఇంకొకతూరి కార్యసిద్ధికై ప్రార్థించవలెను. ఒకతూరి ప్రార్థించి రాలేదే అని ఊరకుండరాదు. ఏదో బాహ్య ప్రపంచమునందే ప్రభుత్వమును ఎన్నో పర్యాయాలు ప్రజలు కార్యనిమిత్తము వ్రాసి తిరిగినను ఎంతో కష్టముగా కాని ఆ పని ఫలించదు. ఇంకా గోచరము కాని ఆత్మ మొరలతో యథార్థము ఎట్లు తెలియను? తెలియదు. కావున వచ్చు వరకు, దేశక్షేమము ఏర్పడు వరకు ప్రార్థించవలను. దేశక్షేమమే తన రాక చిహ్నంగా భావించిన తత్క్షణము తన యొక్క అవతారము తెలియగలదు. అప్పుడే సత్యమతము, దయామతము, జ్ఞానమతము, ప్రేమమతము వృద్ధి పొందును. అవి ప్రతిష్ఠించు వరకు ప్రజలు ప్రార్థనలను చేయుచుండవలెను. ఈ బాధ్యత ప్రజలపై ఉన్నది. పుణ్యపురుషులు ఏర్పరిచిన రాజబాటను అప్పుడప్పుడు ఆ మార్గమున ప్రయాణము సల్పువారైనా లేదా దానికి అధిపతులైనా రిపేర్లు చేయించుచుండవలెను. అదే బోధ అనున్నది. ఆ రిపేర్ల నిమిత్తము అప్పుడప్పుడు భగవంతుడు కొందరు అధిపతులను, మహనీయులను, దైవాంశములను పంపుచుండును. వచ్చినవారి సద్బోధనలే ఆ పూర్వపు పుణ్యపురుషులచే స్థాపనమైన మార్గమును తిరిగి సరిచేయించును. ఈ రీతిగా దైవ సంకల్పము, సాధువుల ప్రవర్తనలు, మహనీయుల సద్బోధనలు కాలక్రమముల తప్పక పనిచేసినా దేశక్షేమమునకు కొదువే లేదు. కాన లోకపు ప్రజలందరూ ఒక్కతూరి ఇట్టి అశాంతి, అన్యాయ, అక్రమములను, అసత్యములను రూపుమాపి ప్రశాంతి, సత్య, ప్రేమ, అన్యోన్య ధర్మములను స్థాపించుమని ప్రార్థించినా తప్పక బాగుపడగలరు. ఇంక వేరు తరణోపాయము లేదు.
In the external world, when the subjects need any convenience or help, they approach the rulers and inform them of their request. So also in the internal state, when there is no conducive environment for acquiring devotion, compassion, peace and truth, the great and good men who desire to achieve them pray to the Lord within themselves. Then, listening to their prayers, the Lord Himself comes into the world and showers His grace on them. This fact is well known to all. Did not Rama and Krishna incarnate because the Lord heeded the prayers of the sages? Many have read this in the Ramayana and the Bhagavata. Why, even Ramakrishna Paramahamsa, though he was divinely born, prayed to Kali to send someone who could preach to the world the dharma that will uproot injustice and selfishness, he could not bring this about by himself. This is known to all who have read his life story. Thus, prayers should be offered again and again for the realization of the task. Such a prayer should not be given up if it does not yield the required fruit in the first attempt. In the external world, for instance, one has to request repeatedly and often run from pillar to post to get a particular work done from the government. Now, how is one to know the consequence of the soul's yearning, which is incomprehensible? Since this cannot be known, one has to pray until the world is established in happiness. The welfare of the world is the sign of his arrival. If this is understood, then it is easy to recognize the avatar immediately. It is then that the religion of truth, the religion of compassion, the religion of wisdom, and the religion of love will grow and prosper. So, until these are firmly rooted, people must continue their prayers. This responsibility lies on the people. The roadway laid out by holy men has to be repaired now and then by either those who travel through it or those claiming authority over it. That is what is called teaching or bodha. It is for the sake of such repairs that the Lord sends occasionally some authorized individuals, sages and divine personages. Through the sadbodha or good teachings of these, the path opened by the godmen of the past is again clear and smooth. Thus, when the Lord's will, the inspired life of sadhus, and the teachings of great person produce their combined effect, the welfare of the world will be assured, and this will stand the test of time. If all humanity pray together for the establishment of supreme peace, truth, brotherhood and love, then unrest, injustice, disorder and falsehood can be eradicated. The scenario will certainly become better. There is no other way out.
So, Bhagwan is saying that if you want good to happen, if you want godly men to arrive onto the earth, prayers are so very important.
Absolutely, yes.
And in fact, I think so many occasions we have seen whenever Bhagwan has undertaken any major initiative, anything of the Sri Sathya Sai Central Trust also, it is always at the request, at the prayer of someone. Isn't it? I mean, even though we know that it is all the master plan,
right,
but if the water project happened, it is because of the prayer of Mother Isharama. So there were always people who were instruments, who prayed. And of course, the Lord magnified it, but you have to sincerely work for it in the sense of putting that out into the universe and longing for it sincerely. Only then, you know, the avatar. Because I remember talking to Dr. Lakshmi Narasimham, the former registrar of Bhagwan's university, and he said, because God is only a witness. And right, there is no karma attached to the divine. There is nothing which obligates him to do any action in the universe.
Absolutely.
So if he has to do anything, it'll only be in response to a prayer.
Right.
So, I mean, so here Swami is saying that you have to, if you want the evil, injustice, unrest, disorder, falsehood to be eradicated, and you want supreme truth, peace and truth and brotherhood and love to happen, then you have to pray to the Lord. And of course, there has to be inspired life of sadhus, there has to be teachings of great persons whose messages have to be imbibed, and of course there is a Lord will. In fact, as Bhagwan here mentions about Ramakrishna Paramahansa and the meeting with Vivekananda, mm-hmm. I was just reminded of the beautiful life of Swami Vivekananda.
Okay.
And you know, right very early in his life, he was a genius. I mean, he himself later on, talking about his boyhood days, he said that, you know, he could understand an author without reading every line of the book. He would just read the first and the last lines of a paragraph and he would grasp its meaning. And later on he found out that, you know, he could understand the subject matter by reading only the first line and last lines of a page. So that is the kind of genius that he was.
Viveka,
absolutely, yeah. In fact, he says, afterwards, I could follow the whole trend of a writer's argument by merely reading a few lines, though the author himself tried to explain the subject in five or more pages. And that is the kind of, as you said, Viveka, Pratibha, that he had. And, you know, we know how, even before meeting Ramakrishna Paramahansa, here Swami says how even Ramakrishna Paramahansa was waiting for Swami Vivekananda. You need people of that nature to come and help the world. And even before meeting Ramakrishna Paramahansa, they say that there was some sort of vacuum mm-hmm. in Swami Vivekananda, because he had joined the Brahmo Samaj. You know, he was with Raja Ramon Roy and very influenced by the literature from the West, because now English education had come to India thanks to the British rule, and they started reading about the French Revolution. In fact, the Brahmo Samaj was very much influenced
right.
by the principles of the French Revolution, while on one hand they were trying to root out certain dogmas and certain principles which perhaps were not in tune with the times and not representing truly the culture of India. At the same time, the Brahmo Samaj was atheistic.
Right.
So even though Swami Vivekananda was subscribed to it, but there was always a vacuum inside. Mm.
Mm.
And they say that, you know, it is this innate spiritual yearning
mm-hmm.
that led him to see Ramakrishna Paramahansa. And they say that he was introduced to him by his teacher. And so what happens is, so this teacher, Professor Hasti, who was lecturing his class on Wordsworth poem, he started speaking about trances and saying that, you know, these are religious ecstasies which were the result of purity and concentration. And he said that, you know, such exalted experience of trance was a rare phenomenon and nobody really has it in the modern times. But even as he said this, the professor said, but I have known only one person who has realized that blessed state, and he is Ramakrishna of Dakshineshwar. You will understand trances if you visit this saint. So this is something that registered in Swami Vivekananda's mind. And he met Ramakrishna Paramahansa for the first time in November 1881 at the house of Ramakrishna Paramahansa's devotee, Surendranath Mitra. And there, Swami Vivekananda was invited to sing. We know that story of how when he sang there, Ramakrishna was so enthralled by the magical voice of Narendra. In fact, Narendra, as he was called then, He didn't care about his clothes and his general appearance. But his eyes were impressive. You know, anyone who would look at his eyes, they would always say that, you know, his eyes were like yogic eyes. It was partly indrawn. That is the kind of eyes that Swami Vivekananda had. And so he sings that beautiful song. Chalo man jaye ghar apne. I think this is a song. You know, such a beautiful philosophical song, asking us to go back to the roots, go back to our source. So that song happens, and then after he finished his singing, Sri Ramakrishna suddenly holds Narendra's hand and he takes him onto the northern porch. And to Narendra's utter amazement, the master, with tears streaming down his cheeks, he says, "Ah, you have come so late, so late. How unkind of you to keep me waiting for so long. My ears are almost seared listening to the cheap talk of worldly people. How I have been yearning to unburden my mind to one who will understand my thought."
Beautiful, beautiful.
And that is...
So it is like a fulfillment of his prayer, the way Swami's put it here.
Exactly.
It's really amazing, because this perspective is very different from what we have read so far.
Yes.
And Swami is saying that Ramakrishna Paramahamsa prayed to Mother Kali that send somebody who will actually go and spread the philosophy of Indian. And all of us know, rest is history, how he went all the way to across the borders and then did that. But in the starting of this paragraph, there are two other things which are very interesting. Because he says, he compares it to, you know, daily life. If you have a problem, suppose you are in a kingdom, suppose you are in a classroom, you have some problem, you go to the class teacher and ask, how do I get this done? How do I get that done? If you are in a kingdom, you go to the rulers and you ask them, I want this to happen, I want this to be explained, etc. So he says, but for the good people, for the sages and saints, when they had problems, when they had difficulties in acquiring these qualities of bhakti, karuna, shanti and satya.
Yes.
So he said bhakti, karuna, shanti and satya. When they had problems with, you know, acquiring these qualities, that is when they prayed to the Lord. And they turned inwards.
Yes.
So because these are qualities that come from within.
It can come only from the Atma.
It can come only from within and from the Lord. So they started praying within. There is a very beautiful reference that was made to bhakti and to the sadhana. Basically, everybody is doing sadhana to connect with their inner self, with who they really are. And so Dr. John Hislop asked Swami. He asked Swami, there are so many types of yoga. So which is the best form of yoga? And Swami said, all this is gymnastics. This you call Hatha Yoga, you call Kriya Yoga, you have different yogas. And some people have called something called Sai Yoga. Swami said, this is all gymnastics of the breath, or you are doing some postures. These are all different aspects. There is only one yoga, and that is bhakti yoga.
Wow.
He says there is only one yoga, that is bhakti yoga. And that bhakti yoga, he said, Madhura bhakti is the highest form of bhakti yoga. We all know how Swami has given different forms of bhakti yoga. So in this context where Swami is saying that people prayed to the Lord with devotion, to acquire devotion, what is the true devotion that we have to acquire? What is the true kind of connect that we need to have with the Lord? So when they have prayed, the Lord comes down in human form to teach what is devotion, to teach what is bhakti. And this whole concept is very nice, because very interesting, because you are having bhakti towards the Lord and the Lord himself comes down to teach you how to love him. So it's like you pray to him to teach you how to love him. So it's very interesting. And Swami says Madhura bhakti is the highest form of bhakti. And he gives this beautiful example of the saint Jayadeva. And Swami says, what is Madhura bhakti? Madhura bhakti is when you start seeing the Lord in everything around you. Everything, every person, every tree, every plant, everything.
Wow.
And he says Jayadeva was such that his devotion was such that, you know, he started seeing Lord Krishna even in the clothes that he was supposed to wear.
Wow.
And he said, how can I wear these clothes? These are Krishna. And he was so lost in bliss that he started running around in the streets without any clothes. And people came and, you know, kind of draped him with some of their clothes. And then he just started running and he saw Krishna and everything. And Swami said, that is the kind of bhakti that draws the Lord, that pulls the Lord.
Absolutely. In fact, you know, when you're talking about this, this is the kind of experience that Ramakrishna Paramahansa also bestowed on Narendra.
Absolutely, yes. With that one touch.
Absolutely. I mean, during his second visit to the master, after a minute or two, Sri Ramakrishna Paramahansa drew Swami Vivekananda near in an ecstatic mood. And, you know, he muttered some words and fixed his eyes on him and placed his right foot on Narendra's body. And at this touch, immediately Narendra saw with eyes open the walls, the room, the temple garden, the whole world vanishing and he himself disappearing into a void. And, you know, he felt that perhaps he is facing death because such a strange experience. First time he's experiencing all this. And he asked the master, what are you doing to me? I have my brothers, sisters, parents at home. What is happening to me? And the master just laughed and stroked his chest and he restored him to the normal mood. And he said, okay, all right. Everything will happen in due time. But on his third visit, Ramakrishna took him to a neighboring garden. And in a state of trance, touched him. And immediately Narendra lost consciousness. And he said at that point in time, he had that experience of his true self. Everything in that state of, in fact, when he went into that state of unconsciousness, that is when they say Ramakrishna asked Narendra many questions about his past, about his mission in the world, about the duration of his present life and everything. And in fact, Ramakrishna Paramahansa mentioned to the disciples that Narendra had already attained perfection even before his birth. He was already an adept in meditation. And in fact, the day he recognizes his true self, he would give up the body by his own will through yoga. But you had Ramakrishna Paramahansa giving him that experience of the oneness of creation.
Yeah, it's very interesting because, you know, in a sense, what Swami is telling here is how the Lord comes down in human form.
Yes.
To give the experience of oneness with him. To give that bhakti, to give that karuna, to give that shanti, to give that satya to the people who have been pining. In fact, the last Thursday when we heard when Swami said, yada yada hi dharmasya, he said, the Lord incarnates because of the prayers of such noble souls.
Correct.
He says, because of the intense tapasya and the prayers of the noble souls, that is, the fulfillment of that is God incarnating on this earth. And there's a very nice reference to this in the book Conversations with Sai Baba with Dr. John Hislop, where Swami's talking about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Swami's talking about Jayadeva, Swami's talking about the saints, and then Swami's saying, see, that is the kind of devotion where you start seeing God everywhere. Then Dr. John Hislop asked Swami, that means from the time of Krishna to the present time, there have been no opportunities to have this kind of devotion. Then Swami says, time? I am Krishna.
Yes.
I am Krishna. What is time?
Yes.
What is time? He says, I am Krishna. Then Swami says, till the time of Shirdi Sai. So Shirdi Sai is the incarnation of God.
Yes.
So Swami says, but he says, there is no time. I am Krishna. Then he says that, this has to be the best time in the world.
Yes.
Because you are here amidst us.
Yes.
Swami says, of course it
of
is.
Of course.
And then he adds, it is better than the time when I was in the form of Lord Krishna.
Wow.
When I was in the form of Krishna, this time is better than the time when I was in the form of Krishna. See, somewhere else in the book also there are references to, he asked Swami, are there such great saints today? And Swami says, there are many, thousands and thousands. Because of their prayer, I have come. I have come because of their prayer. I don't call them and give them interviews. There is a Maharani who has come. But it was not appropriate for me to call her and give an interview. But she is such a great soul, realized soul. And because of such prayers, I have come to this earth. And I am moving amongst
you. I think we have seen that any number of times living with Bhagwan, isn't it? That it can be just one prayer
right.
of a student, you know, or a devotee. And, you know, Swami can build an institution for that.
Exactly.
Reason.
Exactly. He can do anything for, you know, that one prayer.
One prayer, yes.
Right. So here, there is another beautiful aspect of this whole incarnation. When the Lord comes down in human form, so Swami is saying, how do you know that the Lord has come in the human form? He says, when the whole world is established in happiness, he says happiness is union with God. When the whole world is established in happiness, you can take that sign as the sign of his arrival.
Yes.
So that is what Swami is saying. His sign of arrival is when everybody...
Where there is happiness, where there is welfare of the world.
Welfare of the world.
Yes.
And the beautiful part is, yes, because of the prayers of people who are, you know, intensely devoted to him, he has come. But when he comes in the human form, even people who are absolutely against him,
yes.
even people who are, you know, who do not like the Lord, they are also redeemed.
Yes.
They are also taken along. They are also, you know, they also find fulfillment. So in this context, another very beautiful story which Swami narrates, this is from the book Satyasa Anandadai. And I don't think we have heard it several, Swami has not repeated the story several times. But this is a story of Radha and her sister, Chandravali. Swami says Radha and Chandravali. Now what Swami says is, when Krishna was between the age of 11 and 14, he was with the Gopikas in the Repale, in the village. And Swami was saying that what happened is the villagers, they saw that Krishna is playing pranks with all the Gopikas and all that. And they took him away to Vrindavana and they put him there. And Swami said, then they started collecting entry tax. If anybody wants to come and see Krishna, they have put an entry tax for that. And then he says, just like how people try to send me away from this village of Puttaparthi.
Oh my God.
He says that, how people try to send me away from this village of Puttaparthi, thinking that I am going to amass wealth. That is what the people thought. So anyways, the story that Swami is saying is about Radha and her sister. Now Swami says, just as how intensely Radha loved Lord Krishna, her sister hated Lord Krishna. Chandravali was somebody who hated Lord Krishna, and she believed that Lord Krishna was playing the pranks with the Gopikas, and which was not right, and he is the one who is separating the families and he is doing all this. So one day Radha went to Vrindavana to have darshan of Lord Krishna, and she was stopped by this old man at the entrance, and she said, you have to pay tax. And she says, I have nothing. All I have is a basket of cow dung. And then he says, no, you have to pay tax. Then she says, you tell Krishna I have come. So the next day Krishna came and he came to her and he said, no, you have to pay tax. He says, Krishna, you know I have nothing. What can I pay you? He says, you have yourself.
Oh.
Offer yourself to me. He says, surrender completely to me. Atmarpana. Do atmarpana. Offer yourself to me. That is the tax you have to pay.
Wow.
Says, pay the tax. And so she offers herself to Lord Krishna. And then Swami goes about the story where there is this big Govardhana Puja happening.
Yes.
And Krishna comes there and Radha and Chandravali are going to go there. But Chandravali hates Krishna. So she says, no, I will not go. I will not go and see. I will remain in my mother's house. And she's trying to stay indoors with her husband. Then her mother sends word that, no, let her come. So finally, very reluctantly, she came. She came to that place. And she and Radha has assured her, don't worry, Krishna is not coming this side. He's somewhere far off. He will not come near you. So let us go. Let us attend the festival. Let us go bring some water from the river. Let us stay with mother and make her happy and all this. And so Chandravali said, okay, as long as Krishna doesn't come, I'm fine. So they both are going towards the river and right opposite them is Lord Krishna coming. Now, the moment she sees him, she gets so agitated. She gets so agitated, and in that moment of intense thought on Lord Krishna, she experiences a state where everything becomes Krishna.
Wow.
So Swami says, in that state of intense hatred towards Lord Krishna, she saw Radha is also Krishna, trees are also Krishna, the cows are Krishna, everything is Krishna. And as Krishna came close, she gave a tight slap.
Mm-hmm.
She gave a tight slap to Krishna. He said, you are ruining everybody's life. And then Krishna smiled and said, see, she is showing that all of us are one.
Wow.
And Krishna smiled and went away. And it was like a vision, and she was like totally surprised by it, and she saw Krishna everywhere, and that intense hatred for Krishna made her so pure, because there was no other thought. Her only thought was Krishna, 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 because of that hatred. And so Swami says that she was at home, she was relaxing at home, and here comes Krishna. And he came in the form of Radha.
Oh.
He came in the form of Radha. He came to Chandravali and said, see, you know, I am Radha, but sometimes when I think of Krishna, no, I get his form. So he said, sometimes when I think of him, I acquire his form. And so she believed that.
Mm-hmm.
And for 3 days, she lived with Krishna.
Wow.
In the form of Radha. Now then she said, oh, now I have to go back to my husband's place, and he'll be waiting for me. And then she says, okay, bye, and all that. And then Krishna came in the form of her husband. And he came to her and told her that, be very careful about that Krishna. He can acquire any form. He can acquire any form. See, now, today, he may now turn up in my form also. He may come in the form of your husband. So Krishna, who is already in the form of her husband, is telling her, be very careful about Krishna. So intensely she is thinking only about Krishna. And as she is going, her husband actually comes walking opposite. And she goes and like hits him. He says, you Krishna. She hits him very hard. And she says, you have no business, no right to do this and that. So she is full of Krishna. Then seeing all this confusion, again, the story which Swami says is, the villagers felt that, this Krishna is playing too much of this havoc, and this Radha and Chandravali, they are also playing a lot of games. So we should finish them off.
Oh.
So they said, we should burn them.
Oh my God.
And they made a fire. And then Radha tells Krishna, I don't care whether I'm burnt. I don't care what happens to me. As long as I can keep seeing you, keep looking at you, nothing else matters. So they both are made to sit on that pyre. And then Lord Krishna is standing right in front. And she says, how does it matter, this fire? If you want, it will burn. If you don't want, it will not burn.
Oh, wow.
And they actually burn them. And in one instant, Radha, Chandravali and Krishna, all three are not there. And the villagers see that Lord Vishnu is in his Garuda, and this is Bhudevi and Sri Devi.
Oh, wow.
So they get the darshan of Bhudevi and Sri Devi, and then they realize that Lord Krishna is only Vishnu, and these are two aspects of. So Swami says at the end of this whole story, he says, when the Lord comes, everybody, gets the opportunity to go get closer to the Lord, to understand the truth, to understand, to get that bhakti, whether that bhakti is love, or whether that bhakti is virodha, hatred, that intensity of bhakti that is given when the Lord comes in the human form is most amazing.
Absolutely. In fact, that reminds me of something that we have mentioned before also, how during the series of Bhagavad Gita discourses that Swami gave in the bhajan hall, how one of the teachers in the university remarked that what is the point of avatars coming again and again.
Right, right.
Because what you see is, even though it is mentioned in the Gita that the avatars come for the sake of establishment of righteousness, but after every yuga, after the Treta Yuga, you saw that the righteousness actually dipped. And after Dwapara Yuga, righteousness was even less than what it was in the Dwapara Yuga, in the Kali Yuga. So,
on one hand you say that the Lord comes for to establish righteousness, but every time he's come and gone, righteousness has only declined.
Reduced, yes.
Only. So what is the purpose of this whole game? And the next day, how Bhagwan, when he was speaking on Bhagavad Gita, suddenly he stopped and he refers to this question in the professor's mind, and Swami says, how the avatars come for the establishment of only one dharma.
Right.
And that is, as you mentioned, the prema dharma.
Prema.
This is the bhakti.
Yes.
Because only when the avatar comes, you know, you have like hundreds and thousands of people, so much captured, you know, enchanted with the avatar and his glory and his mystery and his power, that you have like hordes and masses of people whose mind turned towards the divine. Just for example, you know, because the Satya Sai avatar came, you have like, I mean, I think none of us would be even thinking about God.
Absolutely.
If the avatar was not there in the midst, you know, and hundreds and thousands like us. So I think that is what Swami says. And the peace that we experience in our heart, Swami says, that is a sign of his arrival.
Correct.
The sign of his arrival is how much peace is there. So, and I think we should not measure the peace in the world going by what we see in the TV channels and the media.
Mm.
But I think we have to go by looking at the peace that each one of us is experiencing in the heart after having opened our heart to the doors of his love, you know. I think that is what is, as Bhagwan says, you know, when there is righteousness in the heart, then there is harmony in the home. When there is harmony in the home, then there is order in the nation. And order in the nation, then there is peace in the world. So you have this whole sequence. So it all starts with opening the doors of our heart to his love, and then, you know, we experience peace. And Swami says that, yes, for this to happen, prayer is so important.
Correct.
I think this is something, I mean, when you think about it, you know, we are doing so many things in the outside world today. You know, you have think tanks, economic think tanks, world development think tanks, UN Millennium Development Goals and everything.
Right.
You know, they all are seeking the welfare of the world, but Swami is telling for the welfare of the world, the most important thing is prayer.
Prayer.
Prayer. Absolutely. Is what is at the actually root. I mean, though it may sound, you know, not scientific.
Logical.
Logical and scientific and rational.
Right.
But actually this is what is the
need.
Need.
Yes.
Absolutely. And, but I think in one way, when you have today so many groups chanting the Gayatri Mantra, for example, it is that prayer, you know, it is for that universal consciousness to rise. So at least in that, to that extent, you know, people.
And even the very fact that Swami has started the Samastha Loka Sukhino Bhavantu.
Yes, absolutely.
And even the, you know, the Dashara Yajnam,
yes,
which Swami has been conducting,
yes,
year after year.
Yes.
That is for Loka Kalyanam.
Loka Kalyanam.
See, there is, yes, absolutely no selfishness in that. It's for, yes, Samastha Loka Sukhino Bhavantu. Let,
yes,
everybody have the benefit of,
yes,
this thing. And how Swami even refers to how it is like a road.
Yes.
Which the Lord has laid, and if the repairs need to be made,
yes,
on this road, from time to time he sends saints and prophets,
yes,
and messengers to set the road right.
Yes.
But then when the Lord comes, he takes the whole humanity along with,
right,
him. And he says the only way of coming out, like you just mentioned, is that strong prayer.
Yes.
So the prayer is something which can, you know, attract, draw the Lord, pull him close to you. Here, you know, there is a very beautiful incident which happened. This is way back in the year 1958. And it's written in the Satya Sai Speaks, where Swami was to go to Venkatagiri and inaugurate this girls' high school.
Yes.
Girls' high school he was to inaugurate. And then what happened? Due to heavy floods, and Swami was actually in Rajahmundry. So he had to cross the Godavari and come. And everybody thought that Swami will not be able to make it because of the floods and because of the organizers were. But Swami said few of them who had that strong faith, you know, were completely lost in prayer. And they prayed from their hearts that, Swami, you should come. And then Swami said, because of that, I came.
Wow.
And it was absolutely impossible, practically speaking. But then Swami said, nothing can hold me or agitate me or cast a shadow on me when I come in this human form. Not even a hair can be touched by forces of distrust or ignorance. My resolve must prevail. He says, my task must be accomplished. My mission will succeed. I have come to illumine the heart with the light divine and to rid man of the delusion that drags him away from the path of shanti and perfect equanimity born of realization. So here he says that because of this prayer and when I have decided to come, nothing can come in the way. So the power of prayer is such, and very beautifully and very sweetly, like how Swami always, you know, what samayani ki tagu maata. Swami used to say that, like how Lord Rama, absolutely fit for that particular situation, samayani ki, for that time, for the situation, for that, the advice that he would give. So when he was speaking to these small children, girls high school in Venkatagiri in 1958, there again he mentions about the power of prayer. And he says how children should get into the regular habit of praying before you sleep,
yes,
praying before you get up, and praying praying as you get up. Just when you get up, you should pray before having your food. And then very importantly, he says, before you start the school, you should have a prayer. And he says that you should believe in the power of prayer. Believe in the power of prayer. Don't make it a farce. Don't make it a show. Don't make it a routine, a ritual. Believe in the power of prayer. He says, if the elders do not believe in the power of prayer, the children will easily find that out.
Wow.
He says, immediately they can see through it. The elders have to first believe in the power of prayer, and then the youngsters, the children will start praying. So he says, when you start cultivating this habit of praying right from childhood, then automatically as you grow, and the teachers should tell them the stories of the lives of saints, and that is how they should inspire them. And he says, this should be, prayer should be the foundation of this entire edifice of schooling. Such a beautiful lesson. You know, on one side Swami is saying, the Lord comes down because of the prayers of the sages and saints. And here Swami is inspiring the youngest, the children, that you know, every aspect of your life should be intertwined with prayer. Because when you have that prayer with you, it can really melt the Lord's heart.
Wow. In fact, I think we have seen that on any number of occasions.
Absolutely, absolutely.
The power of our prayer. And here Swami is saying that what will help for the welfare of the world is the Lord's will. When the Lord's will, the inspired life of sadhus and the teachings of great persons produce that combined effect.
Correct.
So, through your prayers, you invoke the divine.
Mm-hmm.
And what is also important is the inspired life of sadhus,
right,
and the teachings of great persons. And you know, just recently, talking about prayer and sadhus, and I just really had a very beautiful experience. I was in Delhi and I had the chance to go to a Gurdwara, okay, Bangla Sahib in Delhi. And it was a very busy day for me, so I had the chance to go only in the midnight, you know, 12:30 I went there. But you know, the whole place was so full of activity.
Right.
The most touching thing,
yes,
is the way the Sikhs, you know, they were serving there.
Yes.
It was so cold. I mean, yes, Delhi cold in January, you can imagine, you know, how biting cold it can be. But all these Sikhs, they were cleaning that Gurdwara. It's a very, very beautiful place, very richly done and very serene, very sublime. And you have these hundreds of Sikhs, you know, they are pouring buckets of water,
cleaning
the premises.
Right.
And with what joy they are chanting, you know, Satnam, Vaheguru, Satnam. And they're doing it with so much of joy, so much of fervor. You know, it really, I almost felt like I was in Cyclone Thal, the kind of vibes that were there in that place.
Very true.
And what do you see when you actually go to the shrine? You know, in the Gurudwara.
Yes.
You go to the sanctum sanctorum of the Gurudwara. What do you see? You see the Guru Granth Sahib.
Guru Granth Sahib.
And what is Guru Granth Sahib? It is the message.
It's a message. Absolutely.
It is a message. It is a message which is there at the altar.
Right.
You know, and that is what should be there
in our hearts.
In our hearts all the time. And so I'm saying the teachings of the great persons, that that is what should produce that effect and inspired life of sadhus. And if you see this whole idea of prayer, collective prayer, was started by Guru Nanak Ji.
Absolutely.
The whole bhajan movement was started by Guru Nanak Ji. Swami has mentioned any number of times. The sankirtana, bhajan, and bhajan goes on there continuously.
The beauty is, you know, the kind of saints and sages who should be revered. What are the, so here in again in some other context Swami was mentioning, there are different types of sages and saints and sannyasis. Of course, there will be genuine ones, there will not be genuine ones. There will be aspiring ones, there will be people who are in different stages of evolution.
Half-baked.
Half-baked, fully baked, fully realized. So Swami says there are three types. One is this thing, cloth sannyasi.
Uh-huh.
So Swami says cloth sannyasi is somebody who wears the orange robe and goes around. There are so many like that in India.
Yes.
He says orange robe cloth sannyasi.
You see many of them during, you know, this Kumbh Mela.
Of course, we are nobody to pass a judgment of who is who.
True. I mean, you have definitely, you know, many, many evolved souls.
Realized souls.
Very realized souls.
But Swami is saying that is one category.
But you see a sea of saffron.
Exactly. A sea of saffron, Swami says. That is one type of sannyasi, very cloth sannyasi. He says that, you know, these people, they wear the cloth, the orange cloth, but they have not yet controlled their senses. They have not yet gone beyond the mind. They have not yet gone, you know, deep in that experience. So he says, then there is the next level of sannyasi who has controlled their senses. They need not necessarily be wearing ochre robes. He says, such sannyasis who have controlled their senses, they should be in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And they should be part of the world.
Oh.
And they should actually live in the world to test how good their sense control is.
Oh, wow.
He says, you should, so such kind of, they should be in this world, surrounded by the world, and act dedicating the fruit of their actions to the Lord.
They should be like the lotus.
They should be like the lotus. And he says, they should not have ego. And they should work dedicating the fruit of the action to the Lord, and they should not be affected by opposites, like he says, sukha, dukkha and all this. And they should have their senses under control. So this is the next level of sannyasis or saints or sages.
Mm-hmm.
He says that they will be in the regular world.
Mm-hmm.
So you may not even know them.
Mm-hmm.
But that is their level of attainment. And the third level of attainment, he says, are those who have completely surrendered to the Lord. He says, when the heart is pure and there is a continuous chanting of Omkara within you.
Uh-huh.
Very beautifully he says, because you are one with that vibration. You are one with the vibration of Om. And he says, it is like a continuous remembrance of Om. In fact, when asked, Swami said, Swami, should we say Soham or should we say Om? Swami said, see, Soham merely represents the sound of your intake and out, release of the breath. Soham, that's what Swami has said. Swami said, if you are conscious of Soham throughout your waking state, in your sleep state, that itself becomes Om.
Oh, wow.
He says that itself becomes Om. So throughout your waking state, if you are in perfect, perfect sync with Soham, in your sleep, that Soham becomes Om. And he says this category of sages and sannyasis, they are completely in and out, they are in tune with this Om and with this Soham. And he says that when you reach that level, that is the highest level. And you're always in tune with God. And you don't need anything beyond that.
Wow.
It's a very, very deep and very, very...
You know, talking about Omkar,
mm-hmm,
and the life of saints. You know, I was reading the life of Guru Nanak.
Yes.
And, you know, his disciples. So, there is this story,
mm-hmm,
of a very blessed devotee of Guru Nanak.
Right.
His name is Lehna.
Okay.
So they say that this Lehna was someone who belonged to the village of Khadur, which is now in Amritsar. And before he became devotee of Nanak, he used to be a worshipper of Goddess Durga.
Mm-hmm.
And during the Navratras, you know, Navratri, you know, he used to take great pleasure in leading a group of pilgrims from Khadur to Jwalamukhi, the Shakti Peet in Himachal Pradesh.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he would always be very excited about this pilgrimage, you know, finally have the darshan of the Divine Mother, and that would fill him with ecstasy. But suddenly, there was one particular occasion when, you know, when the priest brought him to the shrine, he did not somehow had that kind of ecstatic experience, that kind of happiness that he used to always have.
Okay.
So there was a sense of inadequacy, something is missing, and that sense of emptiness persisted for very long. And in the next year also, when he started this pilgrimage, he got up very early and, you know, he bathed and he sat under the tamarind tree in his courtyard to meditate and pray. And apparently, you know, his wife, Kiwi, she had no idea when her husband gets up in the morning to pray and meditate. I mean, that is how the life of Lehna was. But when he was doing this prayer, suddenly he heard this voice, Ikomkar, Ikomkar, Satnam, Kartapurak.
Mm.
You know, it was a very strange hymn, but it filled him with peace.
Mm.
And then a few days later, they started this pilgrimage. And on the way, instead of going to Jwalamukhi, when they reached Kartarpur, which is Guru Nanak's place, he heard again this sweet voice, Ikomkar, Satnam, Kartapurak, and he said, I'm not going anywhere.
Anywhere else.
I have found my destination, I have found my Guru, I have found the solace, I have found the joy. And he stayed on there, and he started serving Guru Nanak. And any work that has to be done, you know, he would be the first to go out. There is no task that was low for him, no task menial for him. He will be in the fields from the break of dawn till the gathering of dusk. And if, you know, there was any lull also in any activity, he'll go and serve as a laborer at the construction site or serve in the community kitchen. You know, he would sit there fanning people during the summer. I mean, he would go and toil in the langar, you know, which is the Narayan Seva. He would wash and, you know, clean the utensils, and all that time he would be just singing the Gurbani, you know, the message of Guru Nanak to himself, and he would be just be doing the work. And but he was someone who would never go in the front, you know, never want to show that, you know, he is someone who is doing all this, and he had no desire to seek the Guru out or, you know, be noticed by the Guru, nothing of that sort, just selfless, unstinting service. And one evening, Guru Nanak ji, accompanied by another devotee, disciple by name Baba Buddha, so they were going for the evening satsang, and Nanak crosses Lehna, and Nela was standing as usual with bowed head and folded hands waiting for Guru Nanak ji. And Nanak stopped there and asked, who are you? And where do you come from? Swami used to ask, where do you come from? And, you know, Lehna didn't know what to speak. Same thing happens. Most of them, you don't know how to respond. And but Guru Nanak ji placed his hand on his head, and he felt so much joy. And the same experience, you know, when Swami places his hand on your head, you know, he just could not speak anything. And then he just said, my name is Lehna. And Lehna, Guru Nanak ji said, who is Lehna? Lehna means death. He said, who's death? And then Guru Nanak ji said, your Lehna, your death was there to me in Kartarpur, and God has sent you to pay that debt. And then, you know, the days became weeks, and weeks turned into months, and months into years, and Lehna continued to work there and pay his debt to the Guru by working tirelessly and selflessly in the Sangat, as they call the assembly of devotees and disciples, then each night you'd be very happy with the thought that he had done the most that he could do, the best that he could do. No reward he expected, no special mark of favor from the Guru. It was only, and you know, with time everyone knew that Guru had a special place for him in his heart for Lena, Guru Nanak Ji's special love for Lena. And they say that even when he was serving the Guru, Lena never forgot his parents or his wife and his children. So he would constantly inquire about them. He would send messages about them. And and his wife and parents also were very happy. Happy that, you know, he was serving the Guru. So one day after the morning prayers, Guru Nanak Ji calls for Lena and says, "You have paid your debt to me very well."
Oh.
Okay. And he says, "You, there are other debts that you have to now pay. The debt to your father, to your wife, to your children. So you go back to Khadur and you settle your affairs," Guru Nanak Ji says. And so Lena goes back and stays with the family for some time. And once he finishes arranging their affairs and earning something and saving for them, he again comes back. And so there was a heavy downpour when he was returning, and you know, he took shelter in a dilapidated hut. And when he reached Kartarpur in the early hours of the evening, the sun was setting. You know, he hurried to the fields where he knew the Guru would be at work. And Guru Nanak Ji greeted him warmly, and immediately Lena looked around to see what work is remaining. And you know, he started carrying bundles of freshly cut fodder. Okay, now Lakshmi Das, who was Guru Nanak Ji's younger son, so he said, "Okay, I will go home and send one of the volunteers with bullock carts to carry the fodder home." Because he didn't want to soil his clothes, you know, carrying this wet fodder, because all the slush will fall on the shirt. But Lena, without a word, lifted those bundles onto his head, and he started going through the fields. In fact, the fodder was wet, it was dripping wet, there was muddy water and everything. And interestingly, before he came, his wife had given him a very beautiful shirt made of Chinese silk. And, you know, and Lena said, you know, "Where will I ever need to wear something so grand? You know, you're giving me such a shirt." And so his wife said, "See, when you return to Kartarpur, when you meet your Guru
wear that.
That time you wear it." Okay. And so now he was wearing that special shirt, and, you know, and the whole thing was getting dirty. He didn't bother, you know, he didn't notice it. But it was Sulakini, who was the wife of Guru Nanak Ji. He comes to Guru Nanak Ji and says, "How could you do this? You know, how could you allow Lena to carry this load and dirty such a beautiful shirt and dirty his clothes with mud?" And then Guru Nanak Ji replies, "When the mud comes from such willing and selfless service, it no longer remains mud. It becomes saffron."
Beautiful.
Becomes saffron. And when the load of fodder is carried by Lena, it is no longer a load of fodder, but it's the halo of God's blessing.
Beautiful.
So, I mean, and when people looked at, they say when people looked at Lena, they could see that halo, they could see that glow of that circle of light around him. And I mean, that is how Lena won the heart of Guru Nanak Ji. And in fact, there are the most stories about how, you know, when the monsoon broke out in full fury in the middle of the night, and, you know, it was mentioned to Guru Nanak Ji that, you know, one of the walls of the newly built wing of the Dharmashala was about to give away. And so Guru Nanak Ji hurried there to see the extent of the damage. And so he saw a handful of disciples already there, and he saw Lena there. And part of the wall had been, you know, had given away, and something needed to be done to immediately shore it up. And the entire wall was in danger of coming down. And so Nanak turned to his son Lakshmi Das and said, "Son, you know, this needs to be attended immediately." And Lakshmi Das said, "Yes, father, as soon as the first light breaks, you know, in the morning, I will find the masons and I will have attended to." And the little group dispersed. But Lena stayed there. And he surveyed the extent of the damage right at that moment. And because, you know, the words of Guru Nanak Ji was, this needs to be attended to immediately. And he was there. He went out to look for a regular mason. He could not find, you know, he found one old mason and no longer really capable of working himself, but he can supervise. So he persuaded four other disciples to help, and they collected whatever material they can get with the help of, and took the help of this expert senior mason. Hour after hour, through that long stormy night, Lena and his companion struggled under the directions of this mason. And in fact, almost on two occasions, when they thought they are almost completing the work, then this expert person will say, no, I think we have to do it this way. And again, they would start the work. And a little before dawn, you know, they were somehow done and the danger had been averted. And in the morning, when Guru Nanak ji came to take stock of the situation, and he saw how the timely action of Lena had averted the danger. And by now, looking at Lena and looking at his commitment to work, everyone was thinking that, you know, it should be Lena who should be the successor of Guru Nanak ji. In fact, there was also Sri Chand, who was one of the older sons of Guru Nanak ji. He was also a very spiritually inclined person, and he did not really aspire to succeed his father. And because all this thing was going on in people's mind, Guru Nanak ji calls a meeting of all his disciples and devotees along with his sons. And then Guru Nanak ji calls Lena and says, "Bhai Lena, you have shown through your selfless service over these long years that you are the flesh of my flesh and the blood of my blood. You are an anga of my body. You are a part of my body."
Beautiful.
And he says to his brother, to the other disciple, "Come, Bhai Buddha, come and apply the saffron paste on Lena's forehead. You are a part of me. You are best suited to carry forward the work that I have begun." And that is how Lena was ordained as the second guru of the Sikhs, Guru Angad Dev. Because Guru Nanak said that he is my Anga.
Part of me.
Part of me. Angad. You see, that is the story of Guru Angad Dev.
That's as Swami was saying, that the saints and sages are sent. So when their lives inspire, inspire thousands and millions of people.
So Guru Nanak ji came because of perhaps prayers of so many devotees, and you know, again, it was Guru Nanak ji who found Angad.
Absolutely.
And after that, you know, Angad probably found, so we have 10 Sikh gurus, and it is, you know, it is, and when, and you know, and if you want to see what is the result, you know, what have the world, what has the world attained? I mean, go to the Gurudwara. You will experience the peace. Because I was with one of my friends and he said, you know, every night after his stressful work in the office, he just wants to come to the Gurudwara and just spend some time. And that is his way to, you know, connect and relax and rejuvenate himself.
Beautiful, beautiful.
Wow. Amazing. So, I know, I think there is so much that can be discussed. The lives of saints are unending, and the way they can inspire us is absolutely fabulous. So dear listeners, we'll continue this in the coming episodes of Vahini Satsang. If you have any queries or comments, please feel free to join with us. It is a satsang. It is just the joy of being in this beautiful company where we ruminate on his message and on the ways to practice his message in our lives. If you have any queries or comments, as always, please feel free to write to us. You can write to listener@radiosai.org. You can also WhatsApp us, anything that you want to say to us. So our WhatsApp number is 9393258258. Once again, 9393258258. Thank you so much for being with us through this beautiful satsang. Sai Ram.